G'day team, we can't get enough of Mr. LeBusque. He is back again. This is a, we recorded a couple of eps on the same day. Let's be honest, Harps, let's tell people what's going on. So Tiff and Mark and I, Mark from the Simply Practically Human podcast, went deep on a range of topics and kind of all the, you know, the stuff relating to thinking and doing and creating and being awesome or at least a little better. I enjoyed this chat as well. I hope you do too.
Fellow human beings, welcome to the Simply Practically Human podcast. I'm joined again by Craig Harper, not Mr. Harper. I'm not allowed to call him that, but and also Tiff Cook. Thanks for jumping on, folks.
Thanks for having us, Tiff. Thank you also.
Thank you both.
Well, there's so many thanks. Let's just keep saying thank you to each other.
Let's just keep going around in a little self-gratifying circle of backslapping and your awesomeness.
I think it's that we're going to welcome to the Mutual Admiration podcast.
Yeah.
Craig Harper, Tiff Cook and Mark LeBusque. So rather than doing that for 40 minutes, why don't we jump straight in to a fascinating topic, and we've got the great man in the room who can help us with this because he's doing a bit of work around it. Because people are wanting this, what is motivation? People are saying, I need to be motivated at the moment. There's a lot going on. What is motivation, Craig Harper? A small question to start with.
Yeah. Look, I mean, when we talk about, I'll answer that in a sec, but let me do a little bit of background. Like when we talk about creating success, whatever that means, there's another thing to talk about, success. But when we talk about creating success or positive change or transformation, or talk about personal development or self-help or growth or all of that kind of warm, fuzzy stuff that we often talk about, if you get away from the product and you get into the process, like forget the brand, forget the books, forget the industry, forget the whiteboard lessons, just talk about the process of self-help, helping yourself, or the process of developing yourself, personal development, then there are lots of variables and structure and process and decision-making and all of those things. But an ever-present conversation piece is motivation. And a lot of people talk about motivation being paramount for them or lack of motivation being the problem or the inconsistency of motivation. So if we look in the literature, the scientific literature, it refers to motivation essentially as being a reason. So almost motivation, the word, and reason, the word, are interchangeable. So Mark's motivation for getting out of bed was to go to work, to make some dough, to support his family, to be a great dad, to That's number one, is the reason, the compelling force, the motivation was to do X, Y, Z. The other one refers more to the feeling that we're in the middle of, the emotional state of motivation. And, you know, often when people talk about motivation, they talk about in the same sentence how they feel. I feel motivated. I feel inspired. I feel pumped. I feel excited. I heard Mark talk. I heard Tiff do a presentation. I was so motivated. I got home and I went for a run. I ran 10Ks. I haven't done that for years. I had people contact me after I did the Becoming Ungiveupable episode. I would have had 50 people message me, email me, ring me, messenger me, and tell me that they were inspired and motivated after they heard that. What they were saying was, Craig, my emotional state changed.
Yep.
Now, one of the things that I do, so let's just, for this mini conversation or mini workshop around motivation, when I'm talking about motivation, I'm talking about it in the sense that it is a state of being. I am motivated. I am in the zone. I am inspired. I am fired up. I'm pumped, I'm excited, I'm focused, all in the same wheelhouse. Now, that is good. The problem is it doesn't last. It doesn't last. That state, I'm not saying commitment doesn't last or a desire to do something doesn't last. I'm saying that psychological and emotional state of elevation that we find ourselves in is invariably, for all of us, short-lived. So my questions around it One, what inspires you and motivates you? Because that's always good to know. But the most important question is, how do I stay proactive and productive and effective when I can't be fucked? That is literally one of the most important questions that we can ask ourselves when it comes to the very slippery, difficult, painfully slow, uncomfortable, inconvenient process of reinventing ourselves. Is how do I keep doing what I need to do when I don't want to do it anymore because I'd rather lie on the couch? Because the desire is not enough. Like, clarity is not enough. Resources are not enough. The goal is not enough. Wanting to do it is not doing it. And so what we know is inevitable for most of us, I would say perhaps all of us, what we know is inevitable are peaks and troughs of emotion. The challenge for us is to have the consistency of output and effort and behavior, the consistency in the middle of the inconsistency of what we call motivation. In other words, how do I keep doing what I need to do when most people would stop? So when I have 100 or 1,000 people in a room, at the end of it, Tiff's heard me do this many times, I'll often say, that was great. All right, put up your hand if you're more motivated than you were 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago. Every hand goes up. And I say, well, that's going to pass. And I don't say that because I'm a Debbie Downer. I don't say that because I want to deflate them. I say that because I want them to be practical. So I don't care what you do tonight because you're in the zone, you're pumped, you're excited. I care what you do next Friday in 5 days when you can't even remember what you heard today and Craig Harper's a distant memory, as is the feeling that you're now immersed in the middle of. This is the challenge of motivation. This is the conundrum and misrepresentation of motivation. Motivation is extremely exaggerated in its importance. It is literally, not literally, it is metaphorically the spark that lights the fire, but it is not the fuel that keeps the fire burning. It is what starts the behavior. It is not what keeps the behavior going.
So, mate, love all of that. You've sparked the fire, but now you need the fuel. And I'll throw this to either of you. What's the fuel that keeps the fire going?
So the fuel situation? What's the fuel that keeps fire going? Cool, great. So in other words, what will keep us doing what we need to do to live the life, to create the body, to create the business, to build the career, to fill in the blank, whatever your version of success is? Well, it's not a thing. It's a myriad of things. And we can talk about old-fashioned things, which are very unpopular these days, Mark, like self-control. Fuck that. Discipline. Fuck your discipline. Stick that up your ass. I want an app, right? And then things like structure, process, accountability. And then on a more cognitive level is the longer-term process of creating a new cognitive, emotional, and behavioral operating system, aka habits, behavioral habits, and cognitive habits. So what we're doing is over time, so what we do, the step one is recognizing what are the behaviors that are temporary that shouldn't be. I'll say it again. What are the behaviors in my life that are temporary that should really be all the time behaviors? In other words, habits. In other words, habitual. In other words, non-negotiables. Right. Now, then the challenge is, how do I turn those sometimes things into all the time hardwired into my subconscious mind? How do I do that? Now, why do I need to do that? Well, when you do that, that makes the need for motivation and inspiration related to that behavior redundant.
Yep.
Craig Harper does not need to get motivated. I'm just using a personal example. Craig Harper is not special. But Craig Harper does not need, why is he talking in the third person? Craig Harper does not need to get inspired or motivated to train. It would actually take me more effort to not train than train, because I'm pretty much addicted. Like, it is so ingrained. It is like cleaning my teeth. It is like having a shower. It is like making my breakfast. So the challenge is over time to create initially to create a process, accountability, a framework. Like, for example, let's say you live down the street from me, mate, and you go, "Harps, I understand it, but the reality of my life is, and the reality of me is, I do go through peaks and troughs of motivation. I have literally joined 20 gyms and I've literally started and stopped training, I don't know how many times, but somewhere between 30 and 130 times I've started and stopped." And that's many people's story.
Yep.
I go, "I get it." And I go, "All right, mate, what about this? Every day for the next year, you and me are going to work out together. The chances of you not showing up are pretty much fucking zero unless you're sick or you're dying or something drastic happens, because one, you want to train anyway. Two, you've made a commitment to me. Three, you respect me and you don't want to fucking let me down, right?" Now, so we just add one variable, which is Craig Harper into Mark's journey, right? You don't have more talent. You don't have more resources. You don't have better genetics. You don't have more hours in a day. You don't have fucking anything other than this. Oh, wow. So that's just a really practical example of introducing something into the process that will make it more likely that we succeed.
So just, I'm going to come to you, Tiff, in a minute, but just on this one, I'm really disappointed. I'm not hearing about, there's no silver bullet in here, mate, somewhere. There's no quick, easy fix. All those boring, shitty things you talked about.
Mm.
Where's the magic pill, the silver bullet, the piece there? So I know you talk a lot about that, but Tiff, to you here, your thoughts around this, as Harps was talking, I'm thinking, so Mark doesn't want to let Harps down by turning up the trainer, but he's very fucking happy to let himself down by not getting off his own ass and doing it himself. What's going on there for human beings when they're happy to let themselves down, but worried about what others might be thinking about them? Like,
I think that we've all got, I think that looking at the relationship with that we have with ourselves is an ever-present journey. You know, like we all, you know, because, and decision fatigue. You don't have to decide. You have, because you've already committed. Now your decision, the cognitive decision lies in cancelling that commitment and telling Craig. So there's effort required. And then there's emotion attached to that effort. So I reckon, like, decision fatigue. When, as Craig was talking about that, I was just thinking back at my first boxing challenge, and I did that boxing challenge, and I wasn't into fitness before then, and it was a 12-week challenge, and then I did it. And I remember standing outside that boxing ring after the event. I'd had a shower and put a frock on, lo and behold, and I was watching the other fights. And I just remember in my head, I was like, wow, 6 minutes. 6 minutes, it was over in 6 minutes, and I just changed my life for 12 weeks. And every part of that 12 weeks was discomfort and fear and inner critic and, you know, all of the grotty stuff. And I went, well, that's everything. Everything that I want in life has to be viewed through a 12-week, 6-minute kind of viewpoint.
Yep.
And it changed the way that I committed to everything now.
Yeah, I love it.
Can I add to that? I think also, Mark, when we are committed to doing something with someone else that we like or respect, we remove the possibility of pulling the pin, right? I think most people start whatever the process is. I'm on a fitness kick. I'm changing my eating. I'm whatever it is, right? They start it with kind of this thinking, and whether or not it's conscious or not, it's like, oh, I'll do this and I'll see how I go. Well, fuck, don't start, because I can tell you how you're going to go. I can tell you how you're going to go, right? Now, so you, hypothetical you in this hypothetical story, you have already got, you've got an escape plan, you've got a safety net, you've got a get out of jail card, you've got all these things, but I go, All right, motherfucker, you and me for a year. Are you in or not? Don't fucking tell me you're in if you're not in. In fact, don't give me an answer now. Think about it for the night. Come back tomorrow. And if you are actually fucking fully committed, no bullshit, I will do it with you for a year for free. But yep. Do not fuck me around, right? You come back and you're either fully in or you're not. There's almost no chance of you saying to me, unless you're dying, yeah, mate, my back's a bit sore. I'm not going to see you today, right? But what's happened is, by the way that I've coached you or challenged you or spoken to you, I have pushed you into, and I would do this with somebody like you who I know could cope. I wouldn't do it with everyone. I've pushed you into a cognitive corner where, and by the way, you can say, no, mate, thanks anyway. I don't want to commit, and I would totally respect it. But now where you go, oh, shit, there is no, I'm either doing with this with him or I'm not doing it at all. Right. And once you are fully committed, what you are doing, which we don't normally do when we start a process, is we're taking all the excuses and escape clauses out of the picture, like, because you are fully committed. Now, in fact, fully committed is really a tautology, because you can't be half committed.
No.
Like, there is no levels of commitment. You're just committed, because commitment is I am committed. The rest is I will see how I go, which means I'm uncommitted.
So a couple of things I'm hearing in there. One is you can be like addicted to training, or you can't be fucked, or you might be somewhere in the middle there. Like, where does fear come into this? Because Craig Harper bellows down the, he goes, hey, fucker, I'm going to train with you for a year. Where does fear start to get in the way of you actually turning up and being motivated to succeed? Like, I could have a fear of, I'm actually going to fucking fail at this because Harps has been doing it for 30 years. When does fear get in the way of your motivation, or look, does it?
It look, sometimes, but I mean, I would also say to you, by the way, you know, I don't want to bully you into anything, but I'd say, mate, if you're in, you're in. And if you're not, I'm okay with that. Like, we're still mates. We're still going to talk shit, have coffee, do podcasts. It's not an issue. But I don't have any spare time. So if I'm doing this with you, I'm telling you I am in 1,000%, but I don't want you in 26% because I'd rather not start, you know? Yep. But I think I also, you know, I don't think we should spend our life avoiding fear.
No.
Like, why? Why? Why do we have to do the thing that doesn't scare us all the time? Why do we need to take the comfortable option all the time? I'm not saying take the hard, painful option all the time either. It's like I said the other day, with people talk about, you know, give yourself a self-care day. I'm all for them. I'm also for the have a fucking crack day. Take yourself to the edge and see what's their day. Give yourself one of them. Throw yourself into the fire and figure it out day. Like, you know, sometimes we do need a hug, and sometimes we do need a spar and our nails done and a day off. I mean that genuinely. We need that. But sometimes what we need is a kick in the ass. But people don't want to hear this because it's, oh, it's so fucking brutal. Am I? Because what I'm actually interested in is helping people become fucking resilient. And you don't become resilient by always having another self-care day. How many self-care days do we need before we just start to become precious? Like, let's, you know, it's like, let's get in the gym and let's train. Let's lift weights. Let's work against resistance. Let's also let ourselves have a day off. Let's get a group hug. We all need a rub on the back and a cuddle, including me. Mark, keep that in mind.
No worries.
But, you know.
Tiff, what are you thinking? I was watching you and you were about to jump in, but he was on a roll.
He gets on a good roll.
Oh, he does.
What was coming to me was a conversation that I always have with, and because I do a lot of business networking, so I, as the person that in these business groups, I used to come from the predominantly fitness background, was realizing that every single business person that would present in a business networking meeting, when we talk about our personal stuff and they talk they'll throw out, you know, these are my goals, and everyone has a weight loss goal. 90% of people would put on that little bio sheet, three goals I want, blah, blah, and I want to lose 10 kilos, everyone. But no one was doing it. And the thing, the penny that would drop for them the most was, what are their values? So it was explaining to people, if you if you're sitting next to me and you're building a business to care for your children, and your values lie around being an exceptional father, and you haven't done the cognitive work to link those values to your health and realize that what you do to your body is what your children see, and that makes them better humans. If you don't link those values to your goals, then you don't, you're not going to be driven. You're not going to see the link. So then it's not important.
It's interesting too. It's a great share, because it reminds me of, like, people are, it's easy to say a number. That's a technical transactional challenge. I want to drop 10 kilos. This is an adaptive challenge, what you're talking about. It's changing values, beliefs, and behaviors. That's the hard work. It's like, I do a lot of work with people around adaptive leadership, and it's like, you know what? It doesn't matter. The numbers will be the numbers, but if you can adapt and you can get yourself to a place where you can set yourself up for success because you've changed some of your behavior, some of your beliefs, and some of your values, rather than just got a KPI sheet and said, I need to get to this, you can make a big difference. But perhaps you're writing a lot of notes down. And when you do that, I get both petrified and excited at the same time. What's going on in your mind right now, mate?
Oh, nothing much, mate. I was just thinking about, I think maybe, I don't know how long we have to go. I know we're not doing a long one today, but look, I would like to talk about, the idea of success. And, you know, the funny thing is, last time we spoke about living authentically, and we've already spoken about motivation. And you've got to remember too that that different words mean different things for different people. So not right or wrong, but it's like somebody would say, I want to be successful, and what they mean is they want a great career. Somebody else would mean they want to overcome cancer. Somebody else would mean they want to rise out of the shit childhood that they were immersed in and get a degree. You know, somebody else wants to run a sub 2.5 hour marathon, and so on. So success, the word, the idea, the construct, is individual and personal. And I just think that, you know, there's nobody that I talk to that doesn't want to succeed. You know, when I go, put up your hand if you want to be a failure, no hands go up. And so I just think that it's an interesting thought experiment for us each to do, and not for 3 minutes on a napkin while we're having a coffee, but actually, I was telling someone, in fact, I coach one dude at the moment called Charles, and I coach him via Zoom. And he sent me a message the other day, and he said, can we do a goal setting session? I'm like, well, that's very old fashioned, but of course we can, old chap, right? Fucking goal setting session. Anyway, I was talking to him about, I used to do this thing from when I started playing my Tony Robbins cassettes in my Ford Escort Mark One in the 80s, Ford Escort Mark One chick puller, let me tell you. How much did the girls love me in that? Not at all. But anyway, I used to play my Tony Robbins tapes and the odd Deepak and the odd Stephen Covey and all of these, but mainly Tony back in the day when I was listening. But that was the genesis for me. And I don't love everything that Tony says, by the way, but something of a pioneer. But that was the genesis for me to start to think systematically and methodically and strategically about developing my best life. And I was 23, 24, where I actually started to think about what my life and my operating system and my lifestyle and my income and my work situation, all of those things would look like in the coming decades. And so that, you know, conceptually you're starting to think about really, what is success for me? What does it mean for me? What does it look like for me? What does it feel like, and how do I create it? And so I used to have this ritual, and I did it, I would say, from 23 to about early 40s, I would say 20 years. And that was from Christmas night usually I started on Christmas night, and to New Year's Eve, I would plan the coming year. I would map out, and I would literally, I had a page that I had a template that I designed, and down the left side was all the areas of my life, from spirituality to finance to personal growth to business to physical health, emotional health, relationships. You know, I had all of these things, and I spent about 5 days kind of strategizing and thinking and identifying timelines and particular things that needed to change, and recognizing patterns of my own behavior and outcomes that were negative, not positive. And I just think that this, something like this, is a real awesome tool in our bag of tricks for life.
Yeah.
Rather than just being the person that goes, yeah, I want to be successful. You go, good. What does that mean? I don't know. Shoulder shrug. Okay, well, why don't you, because in a minute you're going to be 5 years older, right? And then in a couple of minutes you're going to be 10 years older. Now, unless you're on the right trajectory and doing the right things and really happy with everything, then it might be a good idea to hit the pause button and invest even a day, just a day, thinking about how to make the next year of your life awesome, so that you are now not living on autopilot, you are not in Groundhog Day, you are now consciously creating your version of what is hopefully leading to a successful existence based on your values and what works for you. I would not recommend my path to most people, because my path from 21 to was, I don't want a job. I do not want a job. I want a business. I want to work hard, but I don't want an employer. And so what that means is, for the last 31 or 2 years, I've had no holiday pay, no sick pay, no guarantee of income. There's been 31 years of financial, emotional, psychological, and commercial vulnerability to celebrate. Most people don't like that. That's where I thrive. Right. And that's not saying so we should be like Harps. Definitely shouldn't. But well, it's trying to figure that out for us as individuals.
And I think that's really an important part, is what is success for each of us? I think that's a great point. What I love, because I think we're just about out of time, but Tiff, because you sort of an open invitation for questions without notice, well, guess what? Here comes one for you. I loved it when we talked before the episode, you're talking about, you know, I was doing a talk to a company and 12 months ago I was here, and and so, you know, that's, you can see that as success. But let me ask you this question. This was raised with me about 2 months ago and it's still stumping me. It's like, we always hear about fear of failure, but we've been starting to play around with fear of success as a topic.
Yeah.
So if you became wildly successful, whatever that means, amongst you, above your wildest dreams, what do you think you might fear about that, Tiff?
Let me give you a real life example, because I come out of, so when I got into fitness, and I've been in it for about 6 years, and I did a lot of little things, and I had this pattern of getting what would be seen as great success straight off the bat as soon as I launched something, you know. So within 3 years of overnight becoming a PT, I had a full schedule and quit my job. Now, that wasn't a plan. That was, oh, I've got too many clients. I've either got to stop saying yes to them or I've got to give this a crack, given the fact that a lot of people would crave this position and I didn't even want it. Well, I just feel like I'm kind of obliged to give it a crack, because there'll always be a job there if I want it. So I did that. And then, you know, I'd launched overseas fitness retreats. They were successful. I launched online coaching. That was successful. And I'd be successful, and then I'd pivot and I'd do something else. There's that word. Oh, sorry, 2021's pivot. I've done it again. But
black mark.
A big question for me, because also I was obviously doing a lot of emotional work on myself as well, and the question I was like, I felt like, and I'm actually doing a workshop on this topic soon, I was like, I feel like I self-sabotage. And what I wondered was, because of my fear of relationships, do I self-sabotage my business and financial success? Because once I've ticked that box, then I create space and time to fix the relationships that I'm actually terrified of.
Yep.
And, you know, that was a big self-discovery, and that's still a question I'm yet to answer, Mark.
Well, you've wrapped us up. I know for myself, my fear of it is just bloody that some bastard will turn up one day and they'll know more than me, and they'll be like, you dickhead, like you're a bit global, mate, but guess what? You're really just that dickhead from Mildura who was a dumbass primary school teacher, as your kids called you. And that's a fear for me. It's like, what if I become known and then someone finds out I'm no good?
The old imposter syndrome.
That's the one. folks, thank you very much, Harps. You're writing more notes. We have no more time for your notes or whatever, but thank you for jumping on again. It's good to be back together again. I can't keep eating as much chocolate and eating as much ice cream, mate. So thank you. And thanks, Tiff, for coming on board.
Thanks,
pleasure,
guys.
Mate. Really enjoyed every time. You look after you and take care. Thanks, everyone. Love you guts.